All right, y'all, welcome back to another episode of TKO, Technical Knockout, the Hardcore Casual MMA Podcast. I'm your host, Hussein. With me, as always, my co-host, Jordan Patrick James.
What's going on?
Today, we're going to recap Holloway versus Zombie and talk a bit about UFC Paris, Gon versus Spivak. Let's do it. All right, so Max Holloway showing out, putting the Korean Zombie to retirement. I thought it was a great fight. Pretty solid card overall. What'd you think about it, Jordan?
It was pretty good. You know, I like being able to wake up on a Saturday morning and, you know, as an adult, like, it's almost like I'm putting on Saturday morning cartoons. I turned on the Hulu. I was like, I'm going to watch some fights till about 9, 10 o'clock, and then I'm going to start my day. So it was pretty good. Zombie went out, you know, as best as you can hope at that point in his career. As I was watching, I was like, man, if I had this fight 5 years earlier, would be so different. Like, it would be so much more. But that's all you can. And hats off to Holloway for not trying to do a brutal finish, but you got to go in knowing that's the way that he's trying to go out. So Holloway probably could have ended it in the second, I think it was, but it is what it is. There was a lot of good fights on it, though. What do you think? What do you think of that main event? Go ahead.
I mean, I loved it, honestly. Chan Sung Jung came out, did really well in that first round. He rocked Holloway, and I thought for a second that we might have seen him capture some of that old magic, you know, that would have been awesome. But, you know, it ended up playing out the way I thought it would. Holloway, like, overwhelmed him with the feints and the pressure. And, you know, Chan Sung Jung is a really good counterpuncher, but Holloway is an expert at, like, diffusing counterpunchers and making them second guess and think about what they're doing, which is what makes the Volkanovski performances so special. But yeah, I love the way that the Korean Zombie came out in that third round. He came out so reckless and was just, you know, trying to brawl because he figured already that, like, you know, he clearly wasn't going to win a technical fight, so why not make it a dirty one? And he had a little bit of success, but then Holloway just, you know, caught him clean with that counter right hook and put him out. I think it was a great way to go out. He went out on a shield like a warrior, like we always knew that he was. And that second round, like you said, Holloway had him hurt and jumped on the anaconda instead of trying to punch him out. I thought that was a little bit of like a mercy from him. He was trying to give him like a proper send off, not put him out too crazy.
Hey, Korean Zombie knew how he wanted to go out.
Yeah, facts. Yeah, I mean, how else would he? You know, he's a gangster in there for sure. The dude's a he's had a crazy career, great action fighter. You know, came into the UFC, had a wild submission, the first twister in UFC history, and then knocked out Mark Hominick in 7 seconds, who was coming off of like a very blood and guts performance against the champ Jose Aldo, and then had a fight of the year. So coming to the UFC, you had a submission of the year, fight of the year, or knockout of the year, and then fight of the year, and then he gets his title shot and was doing pretty well until his shoulder separated. So storied career for Korean Zombie. Hate to see him go, but
I like it. I like it. Like him being like, it's nice to see him go out the way that he wanted to go out, retiring there. Obviously, he had a lot more that he wanted to get done, but you know, he said in a tweet that, you know, he accomplished quite a bit and he's happy with his career. So it's good to see guys be very cognizant and not try to fight up until they're like 45. So question of whether he stays retired and stays away from combat sports, that's another thing. So we will see. But my question is, where does Holloway go from here? Because I know I don't want to see Holloway versus Volk 4, especially after the last performance. I just don't care to see it.
Yeah, there's no point in doing that fight.
The only way, and I was thinking about this, and it started out as a joke in my mind, but at this point, I'm like, you know, why not? The only way is if Holloway's like, I'll put my career versus title on the line. Like, I'm either getting the title or I'm done. Because here's his issue is either he loses again and then Volk goes up to 55, or Holloway says, I'm going to go up to 55 and then Volk follows him up there. And then he has to contend with Islam. He has to contend with Oliveira. He has to contend with Volkanovski back up there again. There's not much more for him to go except take these like fan friendly fights while someone like Volkanovski is holding the title. And then do you really want the title after Volk moves up? If you're Holloway, you went 4-0 again, or 0-4 against Volk, and then now you have the title. It's a weird situation for him because there's such a clear difference between 1-2 and then 2 and the rest of the field. It's a crazy circumstance.
Yeah, it reminds me of when Robert Whittaker was at the top of middleweight and Izzy Adesanya just, you know, beat him twice and Whittaker's beating everybody else. Holloway, I don't know. I mean, honestly, I'd like to see him just keep fighting these young guys, just keep turning them down. I don't like Giga Chikadze, so I think then, that'd be a
then,
cool fight.
Then literally make it that way. Be like, all right, fine. Holloway can't challenge for the belt, but you can't challenge for the belt unless you get past Holloway. So then Volk can just sit there and be like, I don't have to defend the 45-pound belt because you guys can't get past the guy that can't get past me. So
I think they should give it the title shot to Ilya Topuria, and have Holloway just fight somebody else. Like in the meantime. I think Volk is going to move up after his next defense. I can't see him staying at featherweight much longer. There's not much of a challenge for them there after Topuria. So I think if Volk moves up, Holloway will take that vacant title fight against, you know, whoever they want and probably beat them. I don't know. I saw a stat that he's 18-0 against the rest of the division and then 0-3 against Volk. Yeah, I saw the same stat.
It doesn't leave a... It would be exciting once Volk's gone, but it's such a deflating feeling probably for the featherweight division after something like that happens.
Yeah.
Because with at least Connor, he ran through everybody and then he left and didn't defend it. So then after a while, it's like, well, was he
an open
really
division?
Bad? Yeah, exactly. Like he didn't. So, but then this one, it's like literally he beat everybody.
Yeah, this one's like landlocked. But yeah, let's get into the rest of the card before we jump into the one next week.
I wasn't a fan of the co-main very much.
Yeah, no, it was a shitty fight, honestly. Smith versus Spann, a lot of bad IQ moments from Ryan Spann, as is tradition. Definitely had Smith hurt in the second round. Looked like he could have got him out of there. He didn't. Smith just, you know, stayed in there and was the dog that he always is and ended up working out that split decision victory. I thought he did enough to win Anthony Smith. I wasn't upset at the decision, but it wasn't a great fight.
Yeah, I just didn't care for it.
Yeah,
I like the GJ Katsatse and Alex Caceres fight. That was really good. And then it was even better once I found out that Caceres broke his forearm in like the first or second round.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's crazy.
Yeah, so he was fighting with that. And then he was smiling too the entire fight. I'm like, that's the type of stuff that makes me want to cheer for him next time.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'd expect nothing less. That dude's a fucking savage in there. I love Alex Caceres. He's speaking awesome.
Speaking of savage, Rina Nakamura, I did like him. He was very impressive in the first one, but I would have liked to see more ground and pound from him.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I think he had clear control on top once he had him in the takedown position.
Yeah.
And why he didn't just start raining like fists and elbows, which, as we were talking about in the previous one, I think that's the big difference between like freestyle and Greco wrestlers and folk style wrestlers. Once we take you down as a folk style wrestler, we're going to keep on grinding to get that pin or in an MMA case, you know, get you out of there. So
yeah.
I think it would behoove him to really incorporate a lot more ground and pound with his obviously, you know, great
dominant strike or dominant grappling.
Exactly.
Yeah. The thing is, the guy that he was fighting, Fernie Garcia, is so tough. Like, I should have read it going into the fight. Like, before I placed my or after I placed my bets, I searched up the tape on this guy, and he's never been finished. He's always a dog in there, and he's been grappled by some good grapplers. So, if you had money on the Nakamura decision, it was really good odds. So, I mean, shouts out to anybody who picked that.
Well, I think he could have opened up those submissions if he would a little bit more. He got into him quite a bit.
He had that north-south choke pretty good.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think that would have been a little bit more effective if he like softened him up a little bit with you know, a couple strikes GMP. To the body, a couple elbows to the head, or just to get him be like, oh, this is also a threat I'm facing instead of just, hey, this dude's balls are in my face.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, honestly, like regardless of if he got the finish or not, it was a very dominant performance. And I like seeing that out of a prospect, you know, just being able to beat somebody pillar to post is a good like litmus test. And we'll see how he develops, man. I think he's got a long career in this division. I believe he's only like 28.
Yeah,
28,
he's young, dude.
So he's got a lot of time to develop.
Speaking of young prospects, your girl Erin Blanchfield got it done again.
Yeah, no, that was a great performance. Did you watch the fight? It was insane.
I did.
Dude,
she's chinny. She can get chinned. She keeps.
I mean, it's. I don't know if it's hit. Chinny. It's just that she has bad defense, right? Like she leaves
her.
Chinny would be like if she does get hit, she gets dropped. You know, she's so tough.
But that's the thing.
She's
if you
taking
have
those
bad
punches.
Defense, eventually that chin's gonna go.
Yeah, but I mean, tell that to Max Holloway, right? Like, guys been getting hit in the face for the last 10 years at featherweight. It hasn't gotten knocked out yet. But yeah, Blanchfield just completely put on a Merab Dvalishvili type performance where she was getting outgunned in that first round, man. She was getting outstruck. She was getting her takedowns were getting defended. and she just stayed on the pressure and pace and pushed her up against the fence and started beating her up there. And
did
then
she finish either any takedowns?
No, I don't think she did, dude. I think the only time that she did get on the ground was when Santos went for a takedown and Blanchfield reversed it, which was, you know, showed great awareness from Blanchfield, not so much from Santos.
Yeah, she did keep a lot of pressure against her against the cage, though, so that, I think that's what really won the judges over on just the clear control. Santos just couldn't get out of that clinch on the on the cage.
And like the third round when Santos is starting to get exhausted in that third round, Blanchfield was starting to land that jab a lot more. And, I loved her style of pushing her to the fence, breaking off, throwing like three punches and then putting her right back on the fence. It reminded me a lot of Merab, like I said, reminds me of early Demetrius Johnson and like the Dotson fights and stuff. I like that mixing of the martial arts like that. I thought it was beautiful. Well, great performance from Blanchfield, and
this definitely should have been a five round affair.
100%. Like, I think she would have got a finish if it was five rounds.
You think Blanchfield would have got a finish?
I mean, yeah, I just think Santos was getting so worn down. Fourth and fifth round would have been really tough for her, you know.
Although I would have been interested to see, because, you know, trying to go for them. I know Blanchfield's young, but going for them takedowns, that's exhausting. You know, Santos was doing a great job of keeping her out of. And she was just going for that too. Eventually, you go for that well too many times. It would have been interesting. I would have loved to see another 5 to 10 minutes of that. But I think Blanchfield definitely gets the title shot next.
Yeah, I'd love to see her fight the winner of Grasso versus Shevchenko. And honestly, I like her chances against both of those girls. I think she's got the wrestling to negate their games, you know. I know Shevchenko is one of the stronger fighters in the division, but it seems like she's a little bit like her biggest weakness would be her defensive grappling and jiu-jitsu, and I think Blanchfield can definitely take advantage of that. And same deal for Alexa Grasso. And I know she was getting pieced up a bit in this fight in the first round, Blanchfield, but Tyler Santos is one of the harder hitters in the division, and she was not able to do much damage to Blanchfield when she was hitting her. So I expect her to walk through Grasso's strikes. I'd love to see her improve her striking altogether, but I do think she has the skills to take the belt away from either Grasso or Shevchenko. And I'm definitely going to be betting on her.
I would say if obviously we're going to have this discussion once the Grasso and Shevchenko dust settles, but I would like her chances more against Grasso than Shevchenko.
I don't know. When Shevchenko was at the top, that was who I was calling for her to take the belt, was Blanchfield. I do feel like it's a nightmare matchup for her, but I like her against Grasso too. Grasso is just so fast on the feet, so I could see her really making Blanchfield pay for some of those entries. But again, though, her wrestling is a lot worse than Shevchenko, or at least her defensive wrestling. She's been out wrestled many times by Suarez and Carla Esparza to a certain degree. So I think Blanchfield is better than both of those women as far as her ability to mix everything up. So I don't know. I like Blanchfield a lot. Obviously, I'm a huge fan. She's a Jersey girl, so I got to root for her. And I think she's the one. I think she's going to get to that title shot, and I think she's going to hold that belt for a while, man. I really like her chances in this division.
I like the prospect of her ability to be able to continue to evolve, you know, because she's going to be fighting for this belt very young. And
she's got room for improvement, though.
She's got tons of room for, and a lot of people think about, I heard this quote that from someone that said, it's like, I got 30% better once I became a champion, and that's all that changed.
100%.
You know, so having seen that confidence on her with the championship belt, that would be scary.
Yeah.
And it'd be a very scary person to stand across the cage.
Yeah, and she's only 24, so she's got plenty of time.
That's young, dude.
Yeah, I mean, like, even if she hypothetically loses the title shot, I expect her to win a couple more fights and get right back in there. But I think she will win that fight when they put her up there. But yeah, a couple other good fights on this card. Junior Tafa knocked out Parker Porter real quick. That was the first time a fighter's been knocked out in the first round by two brothers. So kind of sucks for Parker Porter, but, you know, that's what it is. Then Michelle Oleksaychuk versus Chidian Jaquani on the prelim. My goodness, bro, this fight was insane. Did you get a chance to catch this one?
I literally just watched the highlights before I hopped on here, and then dudes are swinging. They know that they're not paid by the hour.
Yeah, like, for sure.
They understand the mission of the statement.
The like stylistic matchup on the feet was so interesting. Njokwani was landing beautiful knees to the body, beautiful leg kicks.
Man, dude, Olejic, he survived, man. He survived some shots. That knee, especially the knee that Chidi hit to him, and then I was surprised that he was able to, you know, eat that and counter with the takedown. That was fantastic.
Yeah, great timing on the takedown. Olejic is just a lot more well rounded than Njokwani. Njokwani had him hurt a couple of times, though, with that head kick, too. He, like, flicked out a head kick and had him wobbled. But I expect nothing less from Oleksaychuk, who's a complete dog in there and, you know, will fight for every position. He's not an easy out for anybody. Njokwani, on the other hand, it seems like once he starts to be the nail instead of the hammer, he starts to fade a little bit. And, you know, that's a tough matchup against somebody who's just as game as Oleksaychuk is. So I was happy to see Oleksaychuk get the win. I think I picked him on the pod before. There was a couple other good finishes on the card. But the one that really stuck out to me was JJ Aldrich. I was happy to see her get that first UFC finish. I knew she would. I called for it on the preview pod because Liang Na is the worst fighter I've ever seen in the UFC. And I was just happy to see Aldrich come back and get that that big victory that she needed, you know. But yeah, let's get into this next card. There's some good fights on here. We'll start from the top as is tradition. Cyril Gane versus Sergey Spivak. Yep, Paori Fong. And this is another morning card. We're kind of spoiled in that sense. I think this one starts at 12 instead of 8, but yeah, pretty solid early card. They're in France, so they're catering to that audience, of course. In the main event, you've got the biggest French fighter, both literally and figuratively, in Cyril Gane. He's fighting Sergey Spivak, a surgeon contender. I believe he's Moldovan, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, Moldovan wrestler type, young dude, and pretty well-rounded, all things considered, but his grappling and wrestling is definitely his strong suit, particularly his judo. He likes to use clinch takedowns more than shoot takedowns. And I'm really excited for this fight, man. I think this is it's a classic matchup.
He's on a roll, man.
Yeah, Spivak is what is he on? 3-fight win streak right now. Yeah, 3-fight win streak, all finishes.
A lot of finishes, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not the highest level of competition he's been beating up. He beat Greg Hardy, Augusto Sakai, and then now Derek Lewis. But you know, he's only lost to the best in the division. He lost to Marcin Tybura early in his career. He lost to Tom Aspinall. No shame there. And lost to Walt Harris. He's also beaten Tai Tuivasa. He's beat a couple other dudes, Alexei Linick. Some good fights in there. So I'm excited to see where he goes from here. I think this is a good matchup for him. I think it's a good matchup for both guys, honestly, because Spivak has some defensive irresponsibilities that Gane can definitely take advantage of, especially his speed. And Gane is one of the faster guys at the weight class, so that's a good route to victory for him, is just stay light on his feet and move away and, you know, tag him with some strikes. He's in the Paris crowd, hometown crowd for Gane, so that might have a factor in the fight too. On the other hand, Spivak has great wrestling and great jiu-jitsu, great ground game, a solid judo game. If he gets into a clinch, I expect him to hip toss Gane. And, you know, we've seen Gane get out-wrestled by Ngannou. We saw him get smushed against the cage by Jones and submitted. So the grappling is certainly a weak point for Gane. This is a classic matchup, striker versus grappler. I think the big difference, though, is going to be Gane's movement. I expect him to be able to move out of the way of some of those clinch attempts from Spivak and, you know, land some, like, peppering shots. I'm interested to see how this fight looks when it goes, you know, if it goes to the later rounds, because I've seen Gane get a little bit tired over the fight. And Spivak, I haven't seen that aspect of his game yet. Seems like he's got pretty solid cardio in this weight class. So I'm really interested to see how it plays out. I hope we get a long fight out of it. I'm not sure that we will. I think either guy can smoke the other guy in the first two rounds if they get their game plan going to, you know, to great success. But I don't know who to pick in this one. Who do you got in this one? How do you feel about it?
I'll tell you who I got. I got Sergey Spivak. He's got the momentum on his side and he is super well-rounded. And two, I've lost a lot of faith in Cyril Gane over the last fights. No, nothing against him too. It's just, you know, it might be one of those things where got on a roll, people put too much on him, and then he ended up getting into deep waters against people and, you know, be like, okay, maybe he still needs time to develop. And then three, you got to consider the John Jones curse, man. Like, how many fighters after they, you know, they're on a roll, fight John Jones. And then after that, it's like, who was that guy? You know, I mean, how many guys do we know that went on a losing skid or they were never the same after that?
True.
So, yeah, for me, there's too many factors going for Spivak. I think he's going to get it done. And I think you're right. I don't think it's going to be a very long fight. I would like it to be, but I think that you're going to see Sergey get him out of there under two rounds.
Yeah, I mean, they have Sergey as the underdog here, so good money on him if you want to put it down. I think he's like a plus 160 right now. I put money on Spivak personally. I think he'll be able to get a hold of Gon at one point in the fight. Gon is super slick and might be able to use that movement to stay off the fence and, you know, keep Spivak at arm's length and, you know, pepper him with the leg kicks and the body kicks and stuff like that. But in the event that Spivak does get a hold of him, I expect him to really take it to him, you know, put him down on the ground and beat him up, if not find a submission, maybe like one of those strongman submissions that he loves, like a scarf hold choke or a Americana or Kimura or something like that. I just think the gulf on the ground is way too big. And, you know, we've seen the grappler take out the striker many times over the course of the UFC's history. I mean, I say that, but we just saw O'Malley knock out Sterling in the second round. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a tough fight. It's a tough fight to pick. I think ultimately I'm going to bet on that the fight does not go the distance. The odds are probably not that good on that. So maybe I'll just do like a it doesn't start the third round kind of thing, expecting that the fight would end in the first or second round, because I could see either one of these guys really just getting out there and smoking the other dude. But I hope that's not what happens, honestly. I hope we get a long, drawn-out fight. I hope we get some questions answered on both sides. I'd like to see Gon defend some takedowns. I'd like to see Spivak land some strikes. And, I'm really excited for this fight. I think it's a great matchup. I'm happy with the heavyweight landscape right now. And I'm excited to see how it all unfolds, you know. Co-main event is another very interesting matchup. Rose Namajunas making her flyweight debut against Manon Fiorot. Manon Fiorot, for those who aren't familiar, is a French kickboxer, very volume-heavy, karate-like style, and that she'll throw combinations and circle out. Kind of similar to Ciryl Gane in that aspect, but definitely a lot less power in her shots. She does not have a good ground game. I expect that to be Rose Namajunas' game plan coming into this fight, as you know, we've seen Rose really take advantage of some of these women on the ground, particularly Wei Li. She had some great success against Wei Li in her early career. That's what she was known for, was her submission game. So I'd like to see her come back to that a little bit and go for a wrestling game plan to try to get Manon off her feet and put her in spots that she's not comfortable in. If the fight does stay on the feet, Manon Fiorot has some really good combinations and some good kickboxing, but she does tend to be a little bit one-dimensional in her approaches. She'll throw like a 1-2 sidekick over and over and over. And Rose is very good at learning people's habits and building off of them. And not to mention also, she's really fast. Yeah, for strawweight, she was really fast, and now she's moving up to flyweight. So if she looks anything like she's supposed to, I expect Rose to get this victory, honestly. I like her at underdog odds. If the fight does go to the distance, they might give it to Manon Fiorot just on hometown bias, but I expect Rose to be a little bit faster than Manon Fiorot. She's going to be a lot smaller than her for sure, but she might be able to catch her slipping with some of those, if you watch Fiorot's fights, she kind of gets into a routine where she'll throw the same combination over and over, and I don't think that's a good idea against somebody that's as creative as Rose Namajunas is and as studied as Trevor Whitman in her corner is, you know. So I expect Rose to have some answers. It seems like the first time she fights people, she surprises them with her speed against Ioana, against Wei Li, against Andrade to a certain extent. You know, I mean, you know, she got knocked out with the slam in that fight, but she was landing some really clean strikes in that first round. I don't know. I just think I think people forgot about how good Rose is, and I think that's why the line is where it's at. I expect her to do some good work in this fight. I'm going with Rose on here. How do you feel about this one?
Well, she definitely needs to go out there and put a statement on there. Like, normally I'm not one to criticize people's styles or last fights, but like the last one with Esparza, like that's not a great taste in people's mouths.
Nah.
So, and that kind of got me feeling like whether she's like another hot and cold fighter. When like, you know, she's hot, she can put out anybody's lights. But then when she's cold, it's like, you know, what are you doing? So it'll be interesting to see. I think skill set wise, it's definitely on Rose's, on Rose's side. As long as she doesn't get too intimidated by the size difference that you're talking about, I think she should be able to get her game plan going pretty easily and pick apart Furo. But like I said, I'm just hoping that she doesn't get overwhelmed with that and then try to start analyzing, because I know that the wrestling game plan, the wrestling won't be there as much with Manon, but with the size difference, maybe she starts kind of getting too into that analysis, you know? So I think that's what happened with Esparza. She was like getting paralyzed by analysis and ended up doing absolutely nothing. So I'm going to put my money on Rose. So I'm just hoping that she goes out there and puts on a really, puts on a statement win and shows everybody and reminds everybody who she is.
Yeah, I agree. I hope that's what happens, man. I like Manon Fiorot, honestly, but
I really do too, but I would like to see Rose get back at it. You know,
yeah,
I won't be unhappy to see Manon win, but I'd like to see Rose go out there and just put on like another highlight head kick or, you know, something of that nature.
I can see her landing a nice, like, if Manon throws that sidekick and ends up out of position, I could see Rose circling out to the outside, landing a good left hook and either dropping her or taking her down and getting her back or just jumping on her back. And I don't know, that's just, I can't like take that image out of my head. I just think Rose is going to be a lot slicker on the feet, or maybe not on the feet, but just in the in between exchanges. And I could see her snapping up a submission. I like the odds. They have her at +180, I think, or 160 money line. But I'm going to look at the props when they drop, because I think her by submission should be a good one. But yeah, a couple other really good fights on this card. Benoit Saint-Denis versus Thiago Moises. I'm really excited for this fight. Benoit Saint-Denis, we were backing on in his last fight against Ismael Bonfim, and he got it done as a huge underdog in that fight. He's got a very solid wrestling game plan. Very much a pressure fighter and loves to use that left body kick from southpaw to wear down his opponents. He's fighting another southpaw here in Thiago Moises, who is a very interesting fighter, to put it lightly. The guy is a complete ace on the ground, super slick black belt in jiu-jitsu, and his striking is kind of a blood and gut style. Kind of reminds me in that sense of Alexandre Pantoja. But that being said, he's definitely a lot more technical on the feet than Pantoja, and he does not respond to the pressure as well. And I think that's going to be a big factor in this fight. You see him get pressured, and he'll make mistakes against really good fighters like Joel Alvarez and Islam Makhachev, Demiris Magulov, Benil Dariush. These are all pressure fighters that took advantage of Thiago Moises' inability to back up. And I think Benoit Saint-Denis is going to see those fights, and he's going to learn from those. And I think he's going to, you know, put that pace on Moises, back him up, land some good kicks to the body, land some good punches to the head, keep this fight on the feet, and just outwork him. I think he's going to be the tougher guy in there. I think he's going to outwork him and either win a decision or get a late finish in this fight. I like Benoit Saint-Denis.
I'm probably just watching this fight. There's a lot of people on here with no photos.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of unknown fighters on this card. Just going down the list, I only recognize a few names, but that being said, there are some good matchups.
It's a good time for him, man. 12 o'clock, you being on the air about 12 o'clock.
Yeah, not too shabby. Volkan Uzdemir is coming back. He's fighting some guy that's only crushed cans in Russia, so I like Uzdemir in the fight. And then on the prelims, there's a couple fights I wanted to go over. They got Angelusa versus Reese McKee. Reese McKee fought Hamzat Chimaev, if you guys remember. Fought Hamzat Chimaev and then Alex Morono, lost both of those fights, but, you know, had a pretty good showing in the Morono fight. And then he went back to Cage Warriors, got a few wins, and now he's back in the UFC. So the dude had a lot of potential, but just, you know, pulled a tough draw with those two fighters. And Angelusa had a very good fight with Jack Della Maddalena on the Contender Series. One of the few times that a loser on the Contender Series got a contract, because he had a great performance. And since then, he's been kind of middling in the UFC, but he has shown some really good skills in there. He has good power in his punches. He has good forward pressure. Pretty solid wrestling game, but likes to keep it on the feet. I'm excited for this fight. I'm not sure who to pick, but I think that's definitely one to watch out for. And then there's a bantamweight affair that I'm really excited for on the early prelims. That's Fareed Basharat versus Cletson Rodriguez. Cletson Rodriguez is a shoot-to-box guy. He was fighting at flyweight for most of his career, but in his last fight, he could not make the weight, so he's been forced by the UFC to move up. He draws Fareed Basharat, the younger and less talented, or maybe not less talented, but less polished of the two Basharat brothers. Javid is the one that we've covered on the pod before. Fareed, I think we've talked about, but
I didn't know he had a brother.
Yeah, he's the younger brother. He's got a very similar style. Likes to stay on the outside, throw those long kicks. If the fight does get in tight, he likes to take people down. Maybe not the most aggressive on the ground, but definitely dominant in those positions. Cletson Rodriguez is an action fighter, on the other hand, where Bashrat is very comfortable going to decision. Cletson Rodriguez will die instead. So I'm really excited to see how this fight plays out. They have Bashrat as a huge favorite. I'm assuming it's because Cletson's moving up for the first time in his career. But I don't know. I think the odds are a little bit closer than... I think the fight's closer than the odds imply. I might drop a little tenner on Cletson Rodriguez at +250. But if he can't get his wild man approach working, if Bashrat's clean technical style is too much, I like him by decision. I don't really see him going for a finish in this fight. Cletson's been pretty tough to put away. If he does get the victory, I expect it to be a comprehensive performance where, you know, he lands strikes on the outside. If Rodriguez closes the distance, he'll get taken down. It's either decision on one side or a knockout on the other side for me. I think that's how it's going to go down.
That'd be interesting to see how little Bashrat does.
Yeah, I mean, he's done pretty good in the UFC so far. I think he's 2-0, if I'm not mistaken. Might be 1-0, but he's looked pretty solid. That's all I got for this card. There's some good fights on here. I'm excited for the main event. I'm excited for the co-main event. The top three fights are really good. The rest of the card is, good fights, but not
You
huge.
Never know, man. You never know. That's what's good about them daytime cards. Like, you don't feel like you waste an evening with it's like you go to a matinee on a Saturday. It's like, maybe the movie wasn't good, or sometimes it's like a gem, but
you get out and it's still daylight. Yeah,
it's exactly. That's why I love these international ones. Let the fans get they never get them. So they get really hyped for whatever's going on.
100%.
I get to sit there and watch it with a nice tea. It's a good
day. Yeah, it's not too shabby. It's a good way to start your day. Last week had a lot of fighters that weren't spectacular, but ended up putting on great performances. So I hope this week is the same deal. That being said, there's just not a lot of divisional consequences on this card. I mean, the main event, co-main, and the third fight there are, but everything else is kind of inconsequential. But might be some really exciting prospects that we see develop out of this card.
Man, 293 is not looking super strong.
No, not at all. I mean, they put it together last minute, essentially. A couple good fights, but that's about it.
Sean Strickland is going to have to get real drunk at the press conferences to sell this one.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's a tough fight. I think he's going to get smoked.
Well, yeah, everybody knows he's going to get smoked. Yeah. He's like, this is a Chael Sonnen going against John Jones type situation.
Yeah, that's a great comparison.
Hey, dude, let him get drunk and sell his tickets.
Word. But let's just run down the betting slip real quick. You want to go first?
Yeah, I really only got Spivak and I got Spivak and Rose on this week. Everything else, I'm probably just going to observe.
I think that's a good move. Go with the underdogs in the top two billings. I think the fights are closer than the odds imply. So
Like I said, I'm really just watching this because I'm interested to see how Rose bounces back and how Cyril bounces back. Like, that's my two main concerns going forward. You know, whether it's like, okay, we need to write off Gon for a serious title contender for a while now, or is Spivak, the real deal? Or it'll be answering a lot of questions for those that co-main event and the main event.
Yeah, 100%. I'll run through my betting slip real quick. Main event, I'm still not sure who's going to win. I'm just going to go with the fight to not go the distance. Co-main event, I'm going with Rose. And then I'm going to pick Benoit Saint Denis. I'm going to pick Volkan Oezdemir to, turn back this prospect. And on the prelim, I'm going to go with Bashrat by decision. I think it's a safe pick. I think he's a much more reserved fighter, and I think he can get it done there. Not a lot of betting value on this card, to be honest, but there is some good fights. I'm excited to see how it shakes out, especially with that heavyweight main event. Typically, I'm a little upset when we get heavyweight main events, but this one's a very interesting matchup that I think five rounds would be, appropriate. Like, it can answer some questions in the fourth and fifth round. So those are the main events I like to see. Next week we've got Adesanya versus Strickland. Not a great fight, but there's some other interesting fights on the card. They got Tyson Pedro.
You never know, though. Like, we'll get to that card, obviously next week and everything, but
yeah,
Matt Serra knocked out GSP, so
it's true,
anything happened.
Yeah, I mean, Adesanya is 34. You know, he's been through some wars. There's a chance that Strickland can catch him. I don't see it happening, but it could happen. And then the following week, we got Grasso versus Shevchenko, which I'm really excited for. I'm picking Grasso for sure. Some other good fights on that card. So
they put that shit on free TV, too.
Oh, word? Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, not free, but you know what I mean? It's not.
Oh, nice. It's just a fight night. Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's a fight night.
I like that. I like that, that they put title fights on the fight nights. Like, I've been waiting for that. They used to do it all the time. I mean,
it kind of plays down to the women's division, but like, yeah, we're going to get this down for free.
I mean, it also makes more eyes watch it, though, right? Because, you know, it's a free card, so people can just tune in.
As long as they get paid, that's all I care about.
Yeah, word. And there's some good fights on that card. There's a few good fights coming up. They got Fazia versus Gamrot. They got Bryce Mitchell versus Dan Ige. Joe Pyfer is fighting in a few weeks. Drew Dober. There's a few really good fights, man. I'm excited to see how this these next few weeks play out. But in the meantime, you guys enjoy the fights this weekend. We're going to be watching it in the morning. Don't forget, they're in Paris, France. So we'll see how it all plays out. Maybe they'll get some, I don't know, you guys can get some crudité and some escargot to watch these fights. Really get in the mood, you know. Open up a bottle of Sancerre or something.
Fucking right.
I'm excited to see how it shakes out, though. Thank you so much for listening, y'all. And stay tuned for the next one. Hopefully, we make some good money on this card. Peace out, y'all.